Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Kuf Daled. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the second line from the top of Kuf Dalid Omen Aleph. In our previous shiur, there was a discussion concerning the Zrikas Adam, the sprinkling of blood, as a matir of the skins of a korban that had become posel. Can you have a situation of Zrikas Adam for the purpose of being matir, of enabling the skins to be mutter for the kohanim? In general, sacrifices, once they are sanctified, there is an Isser Mi'ila on them. The Isser Mi'ila is an Isser, a prohibition of benefiting, deriving personal benefit from sanctified items. In order to remove the prohibition of Mi'ila, in the case of those things that have received Kedushas Aguf, that were sanctified with an inherent sanctity, it's necessary for the blood to be sprinkled in the case of animal offerings. What is the halacha if the korban became posel and all that you have to salvage, so to speak, is the skins for the benefit of the kohanim? So we saw on the bottom of Kuf Gimel Amud Beis that according to Rebbe, there is a possibility of the dam being miratze al ha'or b'fnei atzmo. We saw another shita, the shita of Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon, that says ein hadam meratze al ha'or b'fnei atzmo, that the blood sprinkling, if it's going to be only for the benefit of salvaging the skins, then it's not a legitimate sprinkling. Sprinkling of sacrificial blood must be done in such a way that it serves to make the entire sacrifice acceptable. But if the sprinkling is going to permit the skins alone, according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, that's not an acceptable type of sprinkling. The shitas Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi were alluded to on Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, but a source in which they appeared has not as yet been seen. So here, the Gemara on the second line from the top asks, my Rebbe, umay Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, what is the source in which they appear, in which their opinions appear? So before we go into the Gemara itself, let's just note on the outside margin that we have a Noseya topic heading. One is Haim Hadam Ratzal Or B'fnei Atzmo. Can there be such a thing as a blood sprinkling, a sacrificial blood sprinkling, in order to permit the skins alone? According to Rebbe Kane, yes. And according to Rebbe Elazar B'Shimon, lo, that it does not exist. Later, we will see number two, Noilad Boi Psul B'Zman Sho'or Mechubar Adayin Labosar. Let's say that a korban became disqualified before the animal was skinned. We will be looking at a situation, Kodem Zrika, where the psul developed, the ruination of the korban took place before the sprinkling. And there's a second situation, Achar Zrika, where at the time of Zrika, at the time of the blood sprinkling, everything was fine. And, of course, we're talking about a case where the skin was still attached. But after the sprinkling, the tumah or something of a similar nature befell the korban to render it unqualified or invalid. So now, in the Gemara itself, we ask, where do you see the sources, or the source in which Rebbe and Reb Elazar ben Shimon appear? The Sanya, the Tanaic source, appears with the two shitas in them. You'll notice that we have a frame around the source, and within the frame section we have a Tanaic source, and we frame in our marking system Tanaic sources in order to set them off from the rest of the Gemara literature. We will also see the use of a double underline with dots in it for the purpose of emphasis. The phrase that we'll be emphasizing is ukeshuhu im habosar. Rebbe Omer, Hadam Miratz al Or b'fnei Atzmo. Rebbe says that the sprinkling of the blood can serve to permit the skins alone. Ukshu im habosar noilad boi psul. If the skin is with the meat when the psul developed. Bain koidem zrika. Bain la'achar zrika. Harehu kayotse bo. Whether the psul developed before the sprinkling or after the sprinkling, the skin will be treated the same way as the meat. Reb Elazar ben Shimon Omer, Ein hadam miratz al or b'fnei atzmo. A blood sprinkling cannot serve to permit the skin alone. Ukshu im habosar, nolad bo psul koidem zrika, if the skin is still attached to the meat when the psul developed, and the psul developed before the sprinkling, harehu kayotze bo, the skin goes along with the meat and is considered ruined. However, achar zrika, if the psul developed, the ruination of the korban developed after the sprinkling. In other words, while the sprinkling took place, everything was fine. Hurtza basar shah achas, the blood, the korban, the meat of the korban had been acceptable for a moment. In other words, at the moment that the sprinkling took place, everything was fine, so that it was considered an effective sprinkling. After that, some type of psul set in. For example, a psul of tumah set in. We then say, Yafshitenu v'oro l'kohenim. One can skin the animal, and the skin will become mutter for the kohanim. We might want to note that this particular scenario involved a sprinkling that was not for the skin in and of itself. It was for the sprinkling was effective for the entire korban. The fact that a psul set in later doesn't upset the skin in this particular case, according to Reb Elazar ben Shimon. Lema b'derebi Eliezer b'Yeshua komiflagi. We're starting here a long question, and that's indicated by the shin that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line indicating that all of these lines form the question. The essence of the question is an attempt to parallel the machlokis, the Tanaic controversy that we just saw between Rebbe and Reb Elazar ben Shimon, with an earlier Tanaic controversy between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. So the Tanaic source in which they're found starts and says, V'yasisa elosecha abosar v'adam. That's a pasuk, that you shall offer your korban olos, the meat and the blood. Rabbi Yeshua omer, im ein dam, ein bosar. Im ein bosar, ein dam. Rabbi Yeshua says that if there's no meat, so there's no use in sprinkling the blood. If there's no blood, so the meat can't be of any value. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Dam afal pishein bosar. Rabbi Eliezer says that there is value in sprinkling the blood, even if there is no meat. Shenemar v'dam zvochecho yishofech. The pasuk indicates a sprinkling of the blood in and of itself. So then what's the role of this pasuk? According to Rabbi Eliezer, the pasuk that speaks about the meat and the blood. Answer, lo marloch, it informs me, ma dam bizrika af basar bizrika. Just like the blood is sprinkled by standing a bit of a distance from the altar, and a sprinkling action is done, tossing the blood, if you will, to the wall of the Mizbeach, so too there is a throwing action with regard to the meat. This teaches us that there is a gap at the top of the ramp leading up to the top of the Mizbeach, that there is a gap, an airspace between the edge of the ramp at the as it reaches the top of the Mizbeach and the Mizbeach itself, which indicates that the Kohen would stand at the edge of the ramp and toss the limbs of the korban that had to be put into the fire, would toss them over that gap. Hence, one sees that there is a throwing action that applies to the meat itself. Just like we said, there's a throwing or a tossing action with regard to the blood. Lema, can we say? Should we say that man de Omar Hurtza, the opinion of Rebbe, who said that there is a concept of blood sprinkling for the skin itself, even if the blood sprinkling isn't going to be effective for the meat, nevertheless there is such a thing as a blood sprinkling for the skin. So that's Rebbe. He would seem to parallel Rebbe Eliezer. He would seem to parallel Rebbe Eliezer, who in this most recent source said, Dam afal pi shein baser, that there is a sprinkling of blood even if there is no meat. So too Rebbe said, he suggested a sprinkling for the skin even if there was no meat. Uman diomar lohurza, and Rebbe Elazar Bishimon, who said that the sprinkling of the blood for the sake of the skins alone was of no value, Karebi Yeshua would seem to parallel Rebbe Yeshua, who said, if there's no meat, so there's no purpose in sprinkling the blood. The Gemara says, Alibo de Rebbe Elazar, as far as attempting to have the opinion of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon fit in to the Tana of Rebbe Eliezer, that Kuli Alma Lo Pligi, everyone will agree that the opinion of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon cannot fit into the scheme of things as Rebbe Eliezer presents it. Once again, Rebbe Eliezer said there is value in sprinkling the blood even if there's no meat around. Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon couldn't possibly conform to that opinion. Hence, what are we left to say? Ki pligi alibo de Rebbe Yeshua. The opinions of Rebbe and Rebbe Elazar Shimon, they are arguing within Rebbe Yeshua. Man diomar lo hurtza, Rebbe Yeshua. As far as Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, who said that there is no such thing as the sprinkling of blood for the sake of just the skin, that conforms to Rebbe Yeshua in a rather smooth and parallel fashion. That conforms to Rebbe Yeshua. Once again, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, who spoke about the issue of sprinkling blood for the sake of skins alone, and he said it's not effective, parallels Rebbe Yeshua, who said that if there's no basar, if there's no meat to be permitted through the sprinkling, so there's no purpose in doing the sprinkling. Man diomar hurtza, Rebbe, on the other hand, who said that there is such a thing as a sprinkling of blood, even if it's not for the meat, if it's for the skins alone, Rebbe will tell you, ad omar, Rebbe says, omar loch, Rebbe will tell you, ad kan lo komar Rebbe Yeshua hasam el abbasar. Rebbe Yeshua's comment of, if there's no meat, there's no purpose in sprinkling the blood, that is true with regard to the meat. Deleko pseido lekohanim. Since the meat became unfit, and when you're focusing on the meat of the korban that became unfit, that in and of itself poses no issue of a loss to the kohanim. So with regard to the meat, we say there's no purpose in sprinkling the blood for the sake of meat that basically doesn't exist. Aval or, but when you bring into consideration the skins, the ikop seder lekohanim, that if you don't sprinkle the blood, the skins will be a loss because they will still be prohibited based on the Mi'ila prohibition. Afilu Rabbi Yeshua Moide. Rabbi Yeshua will concede that if there's an issue of salvaging the skins through a sprinkling of the blood, Rabbi Yeshua will tell you, go ahead, sprinkle the blood, and that will result in the salvaging of the skins, allowing them to be used and received by the Kohanim. Midi dehave ayotze, similar to Rabbi Yeshua's approach, which we will see very shortly, to the case of kotshe meat that left the Azorah, or let's say korbonus meat that left the Azorah prematurely. In the case of kotshe kotshim, the meat is technically speaking never allowed to leave the Azorah. Disnan, we have the following source: Nitmo habosar oy shinifsal oy shiyotza chutz lekloyim. If sacrificial meat became tomei or invalid or left the kloyim, the enclosed area of the mishkan or of the azar of the Beis Hamikdash, Rabbi Lezer Omer, when we say enclosed area, we mean the courtyard, the azara of the mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Lezer Omer Yizrok. Rabbi Lezer says, well, sprinkle the blood anyway. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, lo yizroik. There is no purpose in sprinkling the blood. However, umoide Rabbi Yeshua, shi'im zorak hurtza. Rabbi Yeshua will concede that if the blood was sprinkled, so it is effective. It has has a certain, hurtza means it has a certain level of effectiveness. In the case of Tumo, for example, so we know that even though Tumo represents a disqualification of the korban, nevertheless there is the tzitz of the gold of the Kohen Gadol, the golden headplate worn by the Kohen Gadol, atones for the problem of Tumo. In the other cases, even though the problem, let us say, of the psul yotze is not atoned for by the golden headplate, by the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol, nevertheless, the fact that Rabbi Yeshua says, even though there was yotze, sprinkle it anyway, according to Rabbi Yeshua, of what value is the sprinkling? So we see from here that it must have a value in the sense that it salvages the skins of that sacrifice. Omar Rabbi Hanino Zgan HaKoyanim Lo Ro'isi, he said in the Mishnah, Lo Ro'isi Or Sheyotze Lebeis HaSreifa. The impression that one gets from Rabbi Hanino Zgan HaKoyanim is that since he said he never saw skins being taken out to burn, it seems that the sprinkling of blood always is effective in being matir the skins. The Gemara asks on his statement, by his saying he never saw skins of a sacrifice being burnt, on this we have a series of questions, and they're represented by these triangles, and we have a mivneh note in the outside margin, mivneh meaning a structural note, and you see a triangle featured, sidra, a series of kushyos, questions, al Rabbi Hanino Zgan HaKoyanim, on what he said, on what Rabbi Hanino Zgan HaKoyanim said regarding never seeing skins being burnt. So the Gemara asks, Veloi, is that really so? Veharei, Purim Hanisrafim Usim Hanisrafim. There are sacrifices known as Purim and Sirim Hanisrafim. These are sacrifices whose blood is sprinkled in the Heichal, and after their sprinkling takes place, they are taken out of the Beis HaMikdash, entirely out of the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, they're taken outside of Yerushalayim, and they are burnt at a place called Beis HaDeshen. And those animals are burnt completely, the entire carcass, including the skin. In fact, that's the way they are supposed to be done. So how can Rabbi Hanis Ganakun say, I never saw skins burning? He certainly saw Purim and Sirim HaNisrafim. So the Gemara answers, "L'mitzvasan lo karminan." Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKoinim never said he didn't mean to say what he said in the context of sacrifices whose purpose is that way, whose mitzvah, whose obligation is to be burnt. In other words, where that is the way it's supposed to be processed, he wasn't talking about that. He was talking about a case where something unusual or out of the ordinary happened to a korban. In such a case, the skins, he says, I never saw the skins burning. The Gemara asks, Hare koidem hefshit v'koidem zrika? If you have a korban that before the skinning of the korban and before the sprinkling of the blood of the korban, a psul developed. Is it not so that everyone would agree that if you have a situation where an animal was, let us say, it was slaughtered, a sacrifice was slaughtered, and before the skinning and before the sprinkling of the blood, it became pusul, it became invalid. Everyone would agree, whether it's Rebbe or Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, that the animal is burnt, is completely burnt. The entire sacrifice is burnt, including the skin. And over the course of years, it's inevitable that at some point, a korban prior to the skinning and sprinkling became pusul. And the entire animal, the entire carcass was burnt, including the skin. How could Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKoinim say he never saw skin burning? The Gemara answers, Cholutz Korminon. He says, I never saw skins that were removed burning. The Gemara asks, V'o'iko achar hefshit v'koidem zrika k'rebi Elazar b'rebi Shimon. Could there not have been a case where a sacrifice became pusul after the skinning and before the sprinkling of the blood? So at the point of the sprinkling of the blood, the skin was removed, but the korban itself, before the sprinkling, became pusul. And according to Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon, who said, "Di Omar ein hadam ratze al ha'or b'fnei atzmo," that the sprinkling of the blood does not permit the skin when that's the only thing to be permitted, as is the case where the korban had already become pusul. So, and in such a case, the skin alone, the skin is separate, it's cholutz, it's removed, it will be burnt. So here you have a case of a removed skin being burnt. So how could Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKoinim say, I never saw an isolated skin being burnt? The Gemara answers, Rebbe Chanina k'Rebbe svirolei. Rebbe Chanina holds like Rebbe in that particular argument. This is, of course, we're referring to what we learned on Kuf Gimel Amud Beis. Rebbe had said that under such circumstances where an animal had already been skinned, and then a psul set in, an invalidation set into the sacrifice, Rebbe would tell you, go ahead and do the sprinkling in order to salvage the skin. And in such a case, the skin would not be taken out to be burnt. The Iboy Esema, Afilu Temo Kerebi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon, even if you say that Rebbe Chanina Sgan HaKoinim holds like Rebbe Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon, as opposed to what we said in answer number one, nevertheless, the situation described of a sacrifice being removed before the Zriko was very highly unlikely to have ever taken place. We learned this before. Moide Rebbe Shein Hefshit Koidem Zriko. Rebbe himself agrees that the likelihood of a skinning before the Zrika practically doesn't exist, very simply because after a korban is slaughtered, they wouldn't delay the sprinkling in order to be mafshit to skin the animal beforehand, before the sprinkling. Therefore, when the korban became posel, it was, let us say, once again, it was slaughtered, and we said it became posel before the sprinkling, that psul must have, it's inevitable that the psul set in, the invalidation set in at the time the skin was still attached to the korban. And as such, the entire animal meat and skin was taken out, was removed to be burnt. Hence, this last scenario would not have presented a possibility of seeing skins, isolated skins being burnt. They would have been burnt together with the animal. But nevertheless, the Gemara asks, V'ho'ika, is there not the following case, Nimseis Trefa B'vnei Me'ayim? This is a situation where an animal is slaughtered, it's skinned, and then it's found to have a problem, a trefa problem, an organ problem. Let's say, an example, a hole in the lung, or many other examples like that, which would render the korban ineffective. But when are you discovering the problem? It's already been skinned. And in such a case, would it not be that the entire korban would be taken out to be burnt, the skin by itself, and the animal, the meat by itself? And we should bear in mind that this is a psul that existed originally. We're finding an internal organ lacking, and that represents a psul, an invalidation that set in even before the slaughtering. So everyone would agree that this is ruined, taken out to be burnt, and you have a case where the skins are being burnt by themselves because the problem of the korban was found out only after you remove the skins. The Gemara answers, Kosova Rabbi Chanina holds that Nimseis Trefa B'vnei Me'ayim Meratze, that if you find a trefus in an internal organ, since the recognition of the problem, the hakora, the recognition of the problem, took place after the sprinkling, as far as we are concerned, the sprinkling took place when everything in our eyes was fine. And as a result of that, such a sprinkling is meratze, is effective. Daiko nami dekotami. We have a Tanaic source that supports this idea. Omar Rabbi Akiva, Midvorov Lomadnu. Rabbi Akiva says in the Mishnah that from Rabbi Chaninus Gan HaKoyanim we can derive Shehamafshit Esabachor Venimsa Trefa. From Rabbi Chaninus Gan HaKoyanim, who says he never saw skins by themselves being taken out to be burnt, it must be that if they skinned a Bechor is a type of sacrifice, it's a firstborn male animal that's offered, that's given to the Kohen and offered as a sacrifice. And if that Bechor is v'nimsa trefa and is found to be a trefa, this is the chisoron in its internal organs, she'ya'usu ha'kohenim ba'oro, ya'usu is from the lotion of hano, benefit from, that Kohenim are entitled to benefit from the skins. In other words, the sprinkling of the blood was effective, even though the basic korban is ruined. Shma mino. So we see that Rabbi Chanina holds that Nimseis Trefa Me'ayim, the Hazrikas Adam, is effective to matir the skins. The Gemara asks, Velamai Komashma Rabbi Kiva, what is the purpose of Rabbi Kiva's conclusion, which focuses on the Bechor? You'll notice we've dashed, underlined the word Bechor earlier on this line because of this particular question. In other words, if Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKoyanim is telling us a halacha across the boards, as we just derived, Nimseis Trefa B'vnei Me'ayim, Zrikas Adam is Meratzeh, so why does Rabbi Akiva have to focus on the case of the Bechor? The Gemara answers, Rabbi Akiva's observation, although it sounds like it was an observation that was in the Beis HaMikdash, it has ramifications for laws beyond the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. Ha kamash malon, de'afilu begvulin. This is a reference to a firstborn that became a Baal Mum, that became blemished. As a result of becoming blemished, it's not useful, it's not eligible to be brought as a sacrifice. However, a Bechor Baal Mum is nevertheless given to a Kohen, and he slaughters it wherever he lives, and is able to benefit from the meat. He eats the meat. What Rabbi Akiva is telling us is that the slaughtering at home of the Bechor, even if the Bechor itself is found to be a trefa, where the Kohen won't be able to benefit from the meat, nevertheless, he is able to benefit from the skins. That, of course, is a halacha that goes beyond the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. This reference to a Bechor Baal Mum, as we said, is something that the Kohen benefits from in his home. Amar Bichia Bar Abba, Amar Biyochanan, halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. We will follow the ruling of Rabbi Akiva. V'af Rabbi Akiva lo amar ela k'shetiroi mumche. Rabbi Akiva, in allowing the Bechor Baal Mum, the skins of the Bechor Baal Mum, for the Kohen, that's provided that the ruling on its being blemished was a ruling based on the legal conclusion of an expert. That's a mumche, where the mumche permitted the Bechor to be slaughtered as a personal. Personal mean at home type slaughtering. Avol lo hitiru mumche, if the Bechor did not receive its approval as being a Baal Mum by an expert, then Rabbi Akiva would not have said that the slaughtering of a Bechor that's outside the Beis HaMikdash and subsequently found to be a trefa, that the skins would be allowed. You have to have the approval of an expert in mumin and blemishes, before such a thing could take place. The Hilchasa Kedivrei Chachamim. The Rashi points out that this comment is not going on Rabbi Akiva per se, but rather it's a reference to it's a reference to Rabbi Hanina Skana Kliyanim. He had said that he had never seen sacrificial skins being burnt on their own. According to Rabbi Hanina Skana Kliyanim, we basically are saying that any time the skins were removed from a sacrifice and a psul developed, the skins, nevertheless, were always salvaged. However, the Rabbonon, there are other Tanaic opinions that disagree with that, and would tell you that the skins are not rendered permissible by the sprinkling of the blood under those circumstances. Namely, circumstances where the sprinkling would not have been effective for the meat as well. If that be the case, so, if you take for example the case of Nimsa Trefa B'Vnei Me'ayim, according to those that disagree with Rabbi Hanina Skana Kohanim, the skins would not be approved or acceptable, and as such, the skins would have to be burnt. And that would be a case in which you can see a point of difference between Rabbi Hanina Skana Kohanim and the Rabbonon, and hence when the Gemara rules that the halacha is like the Rabbonon, we would in effect be saying that the case of Nimsa Trefa B'nei Me'ayim, the skins of such a sacrifice would in effect have to be burned, even though in order to discover it to be a Trefa B'nei Me'ayim, you're talking about a case where the skins were actually removed from the korban itself. So you would have a case of isolated skins, of skins that were separated from the meat, from the rest of the korban, the rest of the animal, being burnt on their own. The Mishnah. The Mishnah features in our Nosei heading in the outside margin, Purim U'Seirim Hanisrafim. We'll see a number of general halachas referring to these kinds of korbanos. So we made reference to them a little earlier in our shiur today. Once again, these are sacrifices, they're sin offerings, whose blood is sprinkled in the heichal. And these sin offerings, unlike a standard korban chatas where the meat is given to the kohanim, these are burnt entirely. And when everything goes well, their burning takes place outside of Yerushalayim, which we call Chutz L'Sholosh Machanois. The Mishnah says, Purim HaNisrafim U'Seirim HaNisrafim. Bizman Shein Nisrafim Kimitzvasan, when their burning is under circumstances that everything went well, there was no tumah or other related problems, Nisrafin Beves Hadeshin. They are burnt at a place referred to as the place of ashes, the Beis Hadeshin, which was located outside of three machnos. Outside of three machnos is a reference to outside the Machne Shechina, Leviyah, Yisrael. And for our purposes, it's outside of the Beis HaMikdash, not only outside the Beis HaMikdash, but off the Har HaBayis, and outside of Yerushalayim. That's the parallel to the three machnos. Umitamin Begodim. There's another halacha regarding the Parma Nisrafim, that those who are involved in the burning of the Parma Nisrafim, their clothing become tomei. V'im Einon Nisrafim K'mitzvasen. However, if there's a case where a psul developed and the burning is not taking place under optimum circumstances, then Nisrafin Beves Habira, carcasses of these Purim HaNisrafim, that let us say the carcasses that became Tomei, for example, so they'll be burnt Beves Habira. Beves Habira, we're not going to define it right now. The Gemara will present a couple of opinions on that, but suffice it to say that it's not located Chutz L'Sholosh Machnas. The Einon Mitamin Begodim. And as a result of the psul setting in, this invalidation setting in before they were processed, those who are involved in their burning will not absorb Tumas Begodim. Their clothing will not become ritually impure. You might say there's a little bit of an irony involved, but that's not relevant to the understanding of the Gemara. All one should remember is that if everything goes well, then there will be Tumas Begodim, and if there's something that goes wrong, so then there's a possibility that there will not be Tumas Begodim. Hoyu Soivlin Oisoi Bemoitois. They were carrying the carcasses of these sacrifices, these chatos, these Purim HaNisrafim, they were carrying the carcasses out of the Beis HaMikdash on poles. Yotsu, and now you have to imagine the animal has a certain amount of length to it, and the animal's positioned on poles. There are people standing there are those standing at one end of the poles and those standing at the other end of the poles. So as they are walking out of the Beis HaMikdash, Yotsu Horishoinim Chutz L'Chemas Hoazora V'Achroinim Lo Yotsu. As they're walking out, so there are the first ones, those that are at the far end of the poles who are walking out first. And those that are at the other end of the poles that are still inside the Azorah, so if we can stop the camera, so to speak, at that point, we notice there are those, it's half in, half out, so to speak. Harishonim, Mitamim Gorim, those that are outside the walls of the Azorah will experience Tumas Begodim, V'achroinim Einon Mitamin Begodim Ad Shietzu. And the ones that are still inside will not experience Tumas Begodim until they exit. Yotsu Elu V'Elu, Elu V'Elu Mitamin Begodim. once they're completely out, then everyone has absorbed Tumas Begadim. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Einon Mitamin Ad Sheyutzas Ha'ur Beruban. Rabbi Shimon says that there is no Tumas Begadim until the fire takes hold of most of the animal. Nita Chabosar, once the meat has been completely burnt, Ein Hasoref Mitame Begadim. Anyone who's involved with the remains, so to speak, at that point there is no longer Tumas Begadim. In other words, everyone that's involved with the burning does absorb Tumas Begadim up till the point that it's completely burnt. From that point on, there's no more Tumas Begadim. In looking at the Nosei topic heading, we notice the outside margin. Beis Deos Befirush Hamila Bira Shemuskri B'Mishnah. We'll see two opinions as to what is referred to by the word Bira that we saw in the Mishnah. Kemokim Sreifa Kishaloi Nasi Kimitzvasan. The Bira was the place that the carcasses of the Parmen Nisrafim were burnt when things did not go according to plan, when some type of psul set in. My Bira, the Gemara asks. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with an Omid Aleph reference, indicating that on Omid Aleph, if you skim down the right-hand side of the Gemara text there, you will notice where the word Bira had appeared. In this case, you'll have to skim down to the very bottom line, where you see an arrow with an indicator to look at Omid Beis. So what is Bira? Omar Rabo Babarchan or Rabbi Yochanan, Mokoim Yesh Bahar Habayis Ubira Shmoi. There is a place on the Temple Mount, outside of the Azora, of course, a place on the Temple Mount that's called Bira. So, according to Rabo, Barbrochana, that's the place that the Parmen Srafim Shenasu Shaloi Kimitzvasan would be burnt. That, of course, since it's on Har HaBayis, that's classified as Machne Leviyah. It's not outside of three camps. It's outside of only one camp, namely, it's outside of the Azora, it's outside of the Machne Shechina. We should mention, even though maybe we should have mentioned it earlier, when we make reference to three camps, the three camps is a reference to the camps of the Jewish people as they were traveling in the Midbar, where there was the Mishkan was Machne Shechina. The area right around the Mishkan where the Leviim were situated is called Machne Leviyah, and where the rest of the tribes of Israel were encamped is called Machne Yisrael. In the case of Yerushalayim, where the permanent Beis HaMikdash was established, the Machne Shechina was the place occupied by the Beis HaMikdash, which was a walled-in area, and walled-in, what we mean is it was the Azora had a wall around it. Outside of that, we have the Machne, the parallel to the Machne Leviyah, and outside of Har HaBayis, outside of the Temple Mount, whereby you're in Jerusalem proper, that's called Machne Yisrael. And outside of Yerushalayim would be Chutz L'Sholosh Machnois. Continuing in this Gemara, very shlokish Omar, Kol HaBayis Kulo Korui Bira. The entire Beis HaMikdash was termed Bira. Shenemar HaBira Asher HaChinoisi. The Bira that I prepared. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Baravua. Shaloisha Beis Hadshonin Hain. The word Deshonin is the plural of the word Deshen. There were three ash sites. Beis Hadeshen Godol Hoya Bazora. Number one is there was a Beis Hadeshen, a burning site or an ash site in the courtyard itself. Shisham, Sorfin, Psule, Kotche, Kotchim. Ve'emure kochim kalim uparim nisrafim siram nisrafim she'ira behen psul koidem zrika. This Beis HaDeshen that was in the Azorah functioned as a burning site for Kotche Kotchim that became Pusel. Those are standard high-level holiness sacrifices, which include an Ola or an Achatos, an Osham. If they became Pusel, so they were burnt in this Beis HaDeshen. In addition to that, were the innards of low-level sanctity sacrifices, such as a Korban Shlomim, and the case we're dealing with of Purim and Nisrofim, Sir Nisrofim, when a psul, when an invalidation set in, koidem zrika, before the sprinkling of the blood. In other words, so if a psul set in very early, even before the blood sprinkling, this Beis HaDeshen was used for the burning of their carcasses. Number two, Ubeis HaDeshen Acher Hoya Behar HaBayis. There was a second Beis HaDeshen on the Temple Mount. Shisham Sorfin Parm Nisrofim Sir Nisrofim Shira Ben Psul Achar Zrika. That place was used for the Parm Nisrofim where a Psul set in after the sprinkling of the blood. We can say that's called... After the sprinkling of the blood, it's called Higiyaz Manu Lotzeis. And Higiyaz Manu Lotzeis means that at the point of the sprinkling, they were expected to be taken out of Gimel Machnos. If at that point, after the sprinkling, before they physically left, a psul set in, according to this approach, they are burnt not in the Azorah, but also not Chutz L'Gimel Machnos. Rather, they're burnt at this second Beis HaDeshen that was on the Temple Mount. These double underlines will have value as we go on. In the Gemara, we'll see another opinion regarding these matters, and we'll be able to contrast the point of difference. Nevertheless, there's still a third Beis HaDeshen we have to get to before we see the alternative opinion on the matter. Ukamitzvason, when everything goes well with regard to the Parm and Nisrofim, Chutz L'Shalosh Machnos. The third Beis HaDeshen was located outside of Yerushalayim entirely. Toni Levi. Levi has a Tanaic source, you can see it's in a frame, and he also deals with the Shlosha Beis HaChanim, and we'll see that he has another opinion with regard to Parim and Nisrofim that where a psul set in. So Toni Levi Shloisha Beis HaChanim Hain. Number one, and as far as point one is concerned, he says Beis HaDeshen Godol Hoya Ba'azor Shisham Sorfin Psule Kotche Kotchim Veimurei Kotchim Kalim Uparim and Nisrofim Sir Nisrofim Usir and Nisrofim She'ira Bahen Psul Bain Koidim Zrika, Bain La'achar Zrika. What we have done with our markings, we've double underlined the expressions Koidim Zrika and La'achar Zrika. In addition to that, we've dashed underlined the point that it says Bain La'achar Zrika. The reason for that is that this is the point of difference between the previous presentation and Levi's presentation. According to Levi's presentation, if a psul set in to the Parim and Nisrofim after their Zrikas Hadam, where was it burnt? It was burnt in the Beis HaDeshen in the Azorah. So what we've done, we've also dashed underlined the word Azorah and the expression La'achar Zrika. That highlights the unique element or the point of difference between Levi and the previous situation. According to the previous opinion, when you had a psul achar zrika, where were the Parim and Nisrofim burned? So you can glance back to where you see the double underline under achar zrika above, and you'll notice that figures under the second Beis HaDeshen. Continuing in Levi, Ubeis HaDeshen Acher Hoya Bahar HaBayis Shisham Sorfin Parim and Nisrofim Sir Nisrofim Shir Ben Psul b'yitziyosan. The second Beis HaDeshen was used for the burning of the Parnas Rafim that Epsul set in after they left the Azora. If after they left the Azora, then the second Beis HaDeshen would be the site for the burning of these carcasses. So if we want to term it in other words, according to the first opinion on this matter, once it reaches the point at which it can be taken out of the Azara, that already qualifies it for the second Beis HaDeshen. According to Levi's approach, it's not sufficient that it reaches the point that it qualifies for being taken out, but only once it's actually taken out of the Azara. Only then do you find the invalid Parim HaNisrofim burnt in that second Beis HaDeshen. And, of course, the third site in under Levi is the same as we saw above, Uchemitzvasan Chutz L'Shalosh Machnois. When things are done properly, when no psul sets in, then they are burnt outside of three Machnos. We might want to point out, we should have done this earlier, is that we have a Roman numeral 1 and 2 in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating these two approaches to the issue of the three Beis HaDeshens. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new marking that we must pay attention to. The diamond appears with a little dashed underline that follows. On the outside margin of the Gemara, you notice the Mivneh heading. You see there a diamond and a dash and a dashed marking. Boi Rebbe Elazar. You'll notice here a diamond and a few, and further down the page, a number of additional diamonds, and they actually continue to the upper part of Kuf Hei Omen Aleph, and you'll find not only on the upper part of Kuf Hei Omen Aleph, but as you skim down, you'll see a Roman numeral 5 in a diamond, skim down, meaning on the left-hand side of the Gemara text. We'll be counting up a total of 5 questions that Rebbe Elazar asks in the realm of Purim and Seirim HaNisrofin. In our topic headings, we will attempt to keep track of each question and treat it as a separate topic, and that if you skim down our outside margins of our Shas Ozer Mark Gemoras, you'll see that as the Nosei heading appears, also Roman numerals 1 through 5 as you proceed to Kuf Hei Amin Aleph. So, we've noted that in our outside margin, under the Mivneh heading, these are the Boi Rebbe Elazar, Sidros Shel She'elos, a series of questions for Rebbe Elazar, Be'inyin, and the topic of Purim Usirim HaNisrofim, these animals, these sacrifices whose carcasses are expected to be completely burnt. We have Nosei number 1, you see the diamonded Roman numeral, Lina. Mahu shetoyil b'porim hanisrafim. Lina is a situation where the animal, the korban, was left over beyond time, beyond its prescribed time for being processed. So in the case of porim hanisrafim, which is a type of sacrifice that isn't expected to be eaten anyway, let us say that they sacrificed it, they slaughtered it, did the required blood sprinklings, and simply didn't burn them that same day, but left it over. That leaving over after till after sundown, what effect does that have? Turning to the Gemara, noticing that this question lasts a few lines, and we've indicated that with our long question marking, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, you see a shin that's circled with a vertical dashed line. All of the lines opposite this vertical dashed line form the question. Boi Rebbe Elazar. Lino mau shetoil b'porim hanisrofim usir hanisrofim.
The word to'il means have an effect. The lino, this idea of it being left over, namely not processed immediately, what effect does that have on the parman nisrafim and the siyon nisrafim? And the question is presented in an aleph o dilma base fashion. You can see a little aleph and a squiggle line o dilma just a few lines later, indicating the transition point where the second side of the question is presented. So the first side is mi amrinon ki mahanyo lino bebosor. When mahanyo would mean to have an effect, do we say that lino has an effect? That is true with regard to the meat of other korbanos, the bar achila, meat that's destined, that's designed to be consumed, to be eaten. And on such an element, namely meat that's designed to be eaten, it could also be a reference to an ola who's consumed, so to speak, by the mizbeach. That's also a form of achila. The achilas mizbeach, the altars eating, or human eating of the meat. So under things that are bar achila, we say that that lino has an effect. In other words, has an effect of ruination. Avolhani, but these, a reference to the parman nisrafim, delav v'nei achila ninu, they're not designed to be eaten in the first place. As we mentioned already, in the best case scenario, when you're dealing with a parman nisrafim, their entire carcass is burnt outside of Yerushalayim. So since they're not designed to be eaten, they're not b'nei achila, lo, maybe then we'll say that lino does not have an effect. Oy dilma lo shna, or maybe the fact that it's a non-bar achila doesn't make a difference. The mere fact that it wasn't processed the very same day, that is reason enough for considering it ruined. And of course, the nafkamina is that once it's considered ruined, so you know that it will, you know that it won't be burnt. Chutz l'gimel machnos. We discussed that in the previous sugya regarding the different base hadeshens. So the question is presented: does lino have an effect on Purim and Sirim hanisrafim? Omar Rava, ho milso iboya leil Abaye. This very question was bothering Abaye. Upashatno lei meho, and I resolved it for him, says Rava, from the following source. Before we read the answer that Rava provided, we want to take note of our geometric forms. So on the outside margin, you'll notice we have a mivneh where you see triangles appearing in two different directions, as they do in the Gemara. If you skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice triangles appearing in different directions. So with the point facing upwards, that's lino lo posel. That's an attempt to say that lino will not have an effect. When the point is pointing downwards, we will be attempting to say that lino does have an effect, will ruin it. So Rava says, I try to answer Abaye's question from the following source. The result of this answer would be to show that lino will not have an effect. The source says, Vishovin, they agree. The term they agree is a reference, the pronoun is a reference to the machlokus between the Chachomin and Rabbi Shimon that took place earlier in this Masechta regarding machsheves pigol, improper thoughts that might take place during the processing of a korban. So there is a machlokus, Rabbi Shimon and the Chachomim, earlier in the Masechta. Nevertheless, they will agree, Shem Chishev Bachilas Parim B'Sreif Osan Shelo Osa Klum. If during the processing of Parim and Esrofim, if an improper thought concerning the processing of the Parim and Esrofim sets in, Shelo Osa Klum, that he has done nothing. What he's done nothing means that it has no effect. The improper thought would have no effect. My love, what are we to conclude from this? Mida machshava lo posla, just like a machshava, improper mind, an improper thought. Improper thoughts include, amongst other things, ideas of having the korban treated beyond its acceptable time. So just like thoughts concerning improper time have no effect, lino nami lo posla, the actual leaving over of the animal beyond its time will also not have an effect. So in an attempt to extrapolate from this source concerning improper thoughts concerning lapse of time having no effect, actual lapse of time will also have no effect. The Gemara rejects this by suggesting v'dilma machshava hu delo posla, avolina posla. Maybe simple thoughts don't ruin the parma nisrafim, but an actual allowance of time lapse, namely leaving over of the carcasses before leaving them over beyond the initial day, will ruin them. Toshma. So at this point, the Gemara tries to resolve the original question of Rebbe Elazar from the following source. But the result of this answer, you can see from the markings, will be to suggest that lina will pasul, just like in the, or as opposed to the source we just got finished with, where the attempt was to say lina does not pasul. There the triangle was pointing up. Here the triangle is flipped over. We will attempt to show here that lina does pasul. Toshma porim hanisrafim sir nisrafim moyalin bahen mishehukdishu. The Mi'ila prohibition sets in to these sacrifices, the Purim and Sirim HaNisrafim, at the point they're sanctified. Mi'ila, as we've said on numerous occasions, is the prohibition of deriving personal benefit from sanctified items. Nishchatu, once they are slaughtered, Hukshru liposu b'tfuyoyim v'muchusu kipurim ubalina. At the point they're slaughtered, they become subject to becoming rendered unfit if there is contact with the slaughtered sacrifices, the Purim and Sirim HaNisrafim that have just been sacrificed, if they're contacted by a Tvul Yom or a Mechusar Kippurim, Ubelina. We don't have to focus right now on Tvul Yom, Mechusar Kippurim. These are issues we've discussed at length in previous sugyas, but right now what we have to focus on is that which you can see dashed, underlined, that they, at the point they're slaughtered, they become susceptible to invalidation through lina. My lav linas basar. Are we not talking about the fact that the basic meat of the Purim HaNisrafim was not treated immediately? So that you see from here that lina does pasul. The Gemara says, no, lo, linas emurim. This source is talking about the innards. We haven't touched on the innards of the Purim HaNisrafim too much till now, but the halacha with regard to the innards, once they're sacrificed, the emurim are removed from them and put on the mizbeach. In that sense, they resemble the way standard sacrifices are treated. That's with regard to the emurim. So what we're saying now is that the lina, as far as the general carcass is concerned, would not have an effect. The only time lina poses a problem to the Purim HaNisrafim, that's with regard to their innards. If their innards are not offered up at the on the day that they're sacrificed, you have the day and the night in which, the night following the day that they were slaughtered, if they're left over to the next morning, then those innards would become invalid and not eligible to be placed on the Mizbeach anymore. The Gemara asks, well, how can you deflect this attempt by saying, well, it's only talking about the Emurim, but Vahomidiktani Seifa, from the fact that the latter part of the same source says, Kulon Moyalin Bohen Bebeis Hadeshen Ad Sheyutach HaBosar. There is Mi'ila on the Purim HaNisrafim until the Bosar is completely burnt. Midaseifa Bosar Reishonami Bosar. From the fact that the latter part of the source is focusing on the meat and not the innards, the earlier part that spoke about the Psul Lina also is Bosar related and not Emurim. With our markings, you can see how easy it is to parallel issues with just looking, focusing on the dashed underline. In the Sefer, we dashed underline the word Hapasar, the deficiency in the, or the issue, let's say the topic of the Sefer was the meat. So the topic of the Reisha also, where it's spoken out, Psulina must be the meat. In the Reisha, we dashed underline Lifsol Belina. The Gemara says, not necessarily. It says, Midi Irya. Who says that that which the Seifa is talking about is necessarily that which the Reisha is talking about? Seifa Basar, the latter section, is talking about the meat. Reisha, Emurim, and the earlier part was talking about Lina with regard to Emurim, innards. Toshma, the Tani Levi. We attempt, once again, to offer an answer regarding the issue of psulina as affecting the Parah Minisrafim with an attempt noticing the triangle pointing down. So we're going to try to show once again here that lina will have a negative effect. Toshma de Toni Levi. This source is actually something we saw earlier, and in order to help us remember where it came from, we have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and if you skim up the page, you'll see where this was coming from. It was coming from the large source that was preceded by Levi's name in that was encircled. So we have a quote from there, where he taught, to Tony Levi, Levi taught, She'ira bohen psul b'yitziyosan. Levi spoke about the second Beis Hadeshen being used as the burning site for Parim and Sirim Nisrafim that experienced a psul after they left the Azorah. So, my lav, psulina. What psul is referred to? Is it not that they became psul by having been left over till the nighttime? Loi. Psul tuma upsul yitzia. The psul isn't a time-related psul, but rather the psul there is that the carcasses became tame, or that they were taken out prematurely. Namely, they're taken out of the Azorah before the Zrikas Dam. So, and under such circumstances, Levi tells you that they're burnt at that second Beis Hadeshen site. But as far as Lina rendering the Parah Minisrafim unfit, that we're not going to conclude. So, at this point, you can see the Gemara is embarking on a new question, and leaving the issue of Psulina, well, you could say unresolved. In other words, there were attempts to resolve the question, but each attempt met up with a rejection. Before we go on in the Gemara, we notice the Nosei, the topic heading in the outside margin, a Roman numeral 2 and a diamond, Yitziah, Im Yotsu Lifnei Zrikas Domim, Mahu Shetoyel Beporim Usim Nisrafim. Does the leaving, or the departure of these carcasses before their blood is sprinkled, does that have a ruining effect on the Parah Minisrafim and Nisrafim? And when we speak about them being ruined, as we've mentioned already a few times in our shiur today, that would affect where they are to be burnt. If we speak about something ruined, we can tell you for sure that it won't be burnt chutz l'gibul machnois. Boy Rebbe Lozer, Yitziah, the departure, the leaving of the Parah Minisrafim and before the sprinkling of the blood. Mahu shetoyel b'parim hanisrafim. Does it have an effect? The Gemara, before answering the question, asks itself a question. It says, "My call me boyalei." What is bothering Rebbe Lozer? After all, if you're talking about a problem resulting from its leaving the Azorah, aren't these supposed to leave the Azorah anyway? Isn't that the whole the expected procedure when dealing with the Parah Minisrafim, that they're supposed to be taken out of Gimel Machnois? Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, ki komibaya lei the question that's bothering Rebbe Lozer is Aliba demanda Omar, according to the opinion, this is an opinion that was seen earlier in the Masechta Daf Pei Tesomet Beis, that talks about Adayin lo higia zmanoi lotzeis. The sugya there dealt with the leaving of the meat of light level sacrifices, light level sanctity sacrifices. We call them kochim kalim. Kochim kalim, as everyone may know, are entitled to leave the azara, their realm of eating. Their acceptable realm of eating includes all of Yerushalayim. What happens with regard to? But we ask, at what point does one eat from them? Only after Zrikas Hadam, after the sprinkling of the blood. Let's say you have meat of Kochim Kalim that leaves the Azora prematurely, if it leaves before the sprinkling of the blood. So there is an opinion that says that they are ruined. So according to the opinion that says, Adayin lo higia zmanei lotzeis, that the Kochim Kalim are ruined, Mi amrinon hani mili basar dein sofa lotzeis choiva. Maybe that halacha of premature departure applies to meat that doesn't have an obligation to leave the azara, which is the case by kochim kalim. One is entitled, can eat kochim kalim in the azara as well. Avol hani, the parim and the siman esrafim, the soifon lotzeis choiva. They are obligated to leave loy. So maybe their premature departure would not ruin them. Or do we say that regardless of whether it's obligated or not obligated to leave, even if it is obligated to leave, but if the time has not yet arrived, and that would be sufficient grounds for rendering it puzzle. Toshma, the Tony Levi. So we tried to answer this question, the question concerning premature departure of the Poram and the Sarafim, namely before the Zrikas Adam, the carcasses were taken out of the Azara. Does that ruin them? So we try to prove from the Levi teaching that we saw above, She'ira boi psul b'yitziyosoi. Levi spoke about a case of Poram and Sarafim becoming ruined. B'yitziyoso, my love, psul yitzia. When it says that it became ruined, b'yitziyoso, are we not in effect talking about the psul of premature departure? Loi, we're not talking about that. The source of Levi says psul tuma upsulina. When it says psul b'yitziyoso, it means that after the carcass was taken out, the carcass became tome or psulina. It was left over. It wasn't processed until after nightfall. Maybe pointed out, Rashi makes this point that this particular source of Levi we're interpreting here as psul tuma psulina, when the very same source above was explained as psul tuma and psul yitzia. This is a standard approach in the Gemara from time to time, where these are simple, what we call push-off answers, namely where the Gemara feels that the citation is not absolutely conclusive, therefore I can offer an alternative explanation. Not necessarily so that these alternative explanations themselves are conclusive, but they're here to show that the citation is not an open and shut case. So that even though above we interpret the citation from Levi one way, here we're interpreting it another way. The third question of Rebbe Elazar, we see on the outside margin, the nosei, the topic heading, Mosai nechshav yitzias roiv shalporim usim nesrofim. At what point do we say that the majority left, the majority of the animal left, nafkamina legabi tumas begodim li'elu shemoitziim oisom? This will have a practical bearing on the issue of tumas begodim, the impurity absorbed by the clothing of those involved in the taking out of the parma nisrafim. We will see in the Gemara the use of an aleph and beis in a little house marking. This house marking, aleph and beis, appear to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. They represent shnei girsois, two versions. Be'ezu tchum nishal ha-sheila. In which realm is the question being asked? We will see an additional marking. We'll see numbers in circles. 1, 2. They represent shlovim, stages, lahavin hashela figur sa'alef. Simply, we're going to look at stages in attempting to understand what the question is according to the first version, so that we'll present the question, but it won't be immediately apparent what the question is. Boy, Rabbi Lozer, parim hanisrav zir nisrafim. Shiyotza ruboy bemiut ever mahu. Rove of the animal left the azara, but in order to achieve the rove, the majority of the animal, part of that majority is the miut, the minority of a particular limb. So that if you consider the minority of that particular limb, which in fact also left the walls of the azara, then we can say rove of the animal is outside. Mahu, hach miuta the aver, the minority part of that particular limb. Bosar ruba shadinale, v'ha lo nafkale. Do we say view that minimum, that minority part of the limb that's outside? View it as part of the rove, the majority of that particular limb, which is still inside. And if you do that, if you say to view it that way, well, the majority of the limb, which is still in the walls of the Azara, hasn't gone out, so this too is viewed as being still in, and I will thereby not have a majority outside the walls. Oidilma, Bosa Rubo de Behema Shadinon. Or do we say that the minority of the limb, which is physically outside, is to be viewed together with the bulk of the animal, which is outside the wall? It's important to note that even though we talk about the bulk of the animals outside the wall, the majority of the entire creature is a combination of the body and the legs. The legs themselves represent a very significant amount of the entire animal, so that you can have a situation where the majority of the body of the animal may be outside, but that doesn't necessarily mean the majority of the body does not necessarily mean the majority of the entire animal mass, as you can see over here. So that even though you have a majority of the body, but you don't have by that alone the majority of the entire creature, you need to include, in order to achieve majority of entire creature, you'd have to be able to include the minority amount of that limb, which is also outside. The Gemara says, well, if that's your question, there really is no question. Pshita, it's obvious. Delo shavkinon ruba de behemov, azlinon bosa ruba de vorem. We would not abandon the chance of viewing the minority portion of limb. We would not abandon the chance of viewing it as part of the body, which is outside, in favor of attaching it in our mind's eye to the majority of the limb, which is still inside. So as far as that's concerned, the scenario we just painted, it's clear to us that rove is outside. Ella, the question would come up, shiyotza chetzioi berove aver. Half of the entire body mass, the entire animal, half of the entire animal is outside. Now, how did I achieve the 50%? Because part of that 50% includes the majority of a particular limb. So you've got the majority of a particular limb and, let's say, body of animal, constituting 50% of the entire creature. Well, I don't have Rove yet. How do I look at things? Hai mi'uta de'ever, the minority amount of the limb that's still inside. Bosor rove ever shadinale vaha nafakle. Do I attach it in my mind's eye to the majority of the limb which is outside? And if I say that, then the minority of the limb which is still inside will be viewed as outside, and then I'm over the 50% mark. Oidilma bosor behema shadinale. Or do I say I view the minority of the limb as being that it is attached to the animal itself, and that part of the animal is still inside, I don't detach in my mind's eye the minority of the limb from the body of the animal, which is still inside. Teku, this remains unresolved. So up till now, we saw what's called the Aleph version of this question. Rabo bar Rav Huna Masni lo begavri. Rabo learns this question with regard to the men, the people. B'misaskin bo chamisha b'nei adam. Five people are involved with taking the animal outside. V'nafgu tlosa uposhiluhu trei mai. Three of the men have gone out, but two are still in the Azara. How am I to view this? Bosor roiv misaskin azlinon. Do we go according to most of the people involved? And if you do say that, so then we would say that Rov is outside. And if Rov is outside, so then we can say that Tumas Begodim has set in. Oy Dilma Bosor Behemo Azlinon. Or do we emphasize the animal? If we look at the Rashi, Oy Dilma Bosor Behemo, the Michbar Ba. No, we will avoid that Rashi, because that Rashi really is associated with the previous Gemara. So the alternative, as the Gemara itself said, or do we view the animal? So that you can have a situation where most of the people that are carrying it out have left, but the bulk of the animal is still inside. And then you would not say that Rove has gone out. Teku. So this particular question remains unresolved. The Rashi that we would like to look at before we conclude our shiur is at the bottom part of Kuf Dalam at Beis. There's a Rashi that says, Shiyotza Rubo, Umiut Echod Min Over Mashlim Rubo, Shel Behem Litziyosoi. Talking about where Rove of the animal went out, and a minority portion of one of the limbs constitutes that majority. Mahu, mi havu yitzio letame es hamis askin boitzas rubon oi loi havu yitzio. Is that considered a departure in order to impart tumas begodim to those that are involved in its being taken out? So this, as we mentioned earlier in our explanation, you can see at the source that the whole issue of the majority being taken out has a ramification with regard to the issue of Tumas Begodim. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.